All right, joining us is Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Very well, Marty. How's it going?
Very good. As another weekend of live radio and dealing with the equipment once again, but I'm here.
I didn't hear the tinkling of the glasses. Come on, we're looking through the window over here.
Right, believe me, I wish I was with you looking through the window and sitting back and watching a little ball with you today. But, boy, it lived up to the game last night, lived up to it, I thought. Wasn't it I told you, Bruce, Saturday night, Giants, Dodgers, 50,000, things happened, and it happened last night. It was classic.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, I'm looking at like maybe a 1-1 game going into the sixth or whatever, and you know Austin Slater, it's two homers off Kershaw. I mean, what the hell? And he really looked the part. And the home run by Yastrzemski off Kershaw was so impressive. Left-handed hitter, you know, 2-2 count, and boy, he doesn't back off in the slightest against a really tough lefty. And then you know, meanwhile, Cueto loses his no hitter to the dusk. Really, I mean. And really entertaining game. I thought he absolutely should have left him in to face Turner. I thought he earned that. Of course, Turner hit the hell out of it. But really entertaining game. And you know, the finish was impressive, too. Trevor Gott, I sort of needed to see a little bit more of him to think he might be a closer. But he came in there. He's got some smoke, and he's got a good breaking ball. And he's a good competitor. So maybe they may have found something there.
Yeah, and again, he's one of those guys that does have movement, a little bit of a funky delivery all of a sudden that's on you.
Yeah.
And if he makes a mistake at 97, you don't necessarily have to hit it out. You make a mistake at 92 and it's gone.
So he
has a little room for error there. You know, it's interesting. I thought of you last night when Cueto lost the no-hitter when Pence couldn't find the ball, which was unfortunate. But, you know, Bruce, let's face it. There's so many things that happen in a no-hitter, great plays that are made that normally aren't made, and things like this happen. So that's baseball, as I like to say. But it reminded me back, I don't know, do you remember when Billy North missed the ball in center field?
I can't believe you said that. I was just that's the first thing that came to my mind. I was sitting in the bleachers that day. Kenny Holtzman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kenny Holtzman, I think it was against Detroit.
Exactly.
And I'm out in the bleachers, and Billy North completely misplayed a ball that with a no-hitter in progress, and I'll never forget Holtzman turning around and yelling like, "Hey!" So it's probably worse than that, and everybody was just dumbfounded. You know, that was just that shouldn't have happened.
No, and to this day, Holtzman, whenever you see him. Whenever you see him, he brings it up. Tom Verweiser hit it. Joe Salvatore.
There you go. Yeah, it was Detroit, yeah.
Texted me last night, and Rick Hurd texted me this morning. And he was at the ballpark, of course, at that time as well and saw it. And so those things happen. But isn't it funny that we all thought of Bill North? And, Holtzman was not
truly
happy.
Truly amazing.
Yeah, not happy. Then I thought of Yogi Berra. I think it was Allie Reynolds in the early 50s had a no-hitter going, I want to say, against Boston. And there was a pop-up, and Yogi dropped it in front of the dugout. And Allie Reynolds had to go out there, and I want to say Ted Williams, but probably not, and had to get the last out again and got it.
At least it wasn't a hit.
Yeah. So those are part of the game. But I thought Cueto was – Bruce, there's something about him, and I think the Dodgers can be dealt with to some degree if you get them on their front foot, because all they want to do is hit the ball out of the park. That's their deal.
Yeah. And some nights it doesn't look that great. You know, they're trying to play catch up, and everybody wants to yank one out of there, and it can come back at you, which I love. I mean, you know, I'm always fond of guys who you know, have a nice level swing. I mean, Alex Dickerson is a good example. He's not one of the lead hitters in the game, maybe, but I just love the way he goes up there and nice level swing, line drives, you know, gap shots, and he'll hit the ball out too. Of course, then you look at Mike Trout, who has probably the most beautiful launch angle swing I've ever seen, and it's absolutely perfect, so to each his own.
Well, you made me laugh on Ken Holtzman. I'm still laughing about that. He turned around and said, "What's up? What are you doing?"
Yeah.
Funny. Very funny. It's a great great baseball memory. Slater had the big night last night. Yastrzemski, of course, still raking. And Donovan Solano, Bruce, you know, you look at the numbers that he's putting up, and I realize it's only 16 games. But, heck, can the guy hit 400?
Well, he's going to hit 500, Marty. I mean, first guy ever to hit 500 over, you know, 60 games, whatever they're going to play. And all I know is he really looks the part. You know, he comes in there. This is a game, you know, Kershaw, if it, maybe he gets brought back down to earth a little bit, but he winds up getting three hits. You know, his numbers almost went down. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. He just looks the part, is what I like about him. He's a really good hitter, and he's got that spot right now, which on the Giants is not always easy to earn.
No, they put out the list this morning, the highest Giants average through the first 16 games of the season. This goes back to the New York days as well, and the great Chief Myers.
Oh, catcher, huh?
Yeah, 522. Sam Mertes, M-E-R-T-E-S, I do not, 1903. Don't know him. 521. Barry Bonds hit 500 in 2004, 19 for 38. And then you get Willie in 1964. Willie Mays, 468, 29 for 62. And then you get Solano at 462 through 16 games. How about that?
That's beautiful. The guy, you can see him playing, you know, for years with this club. He's not going to, if he hits 302 or 295, he's fine. You know, this isn't going to last, but he just has a really good approach. You know, he'll dead pull you, he'll go the other way, and he has a little bit of power. So it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely fun to watch. Well, the Dodgers lose last night. The Rockies continue one hitter last night for the Rockies. And now today it's Arizona and San Diego. And Bumgarner goes today. And Bruce, you know, it's hard to explain. Maybe he didn't work out enough, but the velocity is down. And he goes today against a San Diego team. This is going to be an interesting one to follow.
Yeah, that's a pretty big start for him because he's kind of in the spotlight now. Everybody's been focusing on he's lost quite a bit off his velocity. When you lose 3.5 miles per hour from the previous year on the four-seamer, the conventional fastball, you know, that's kind of an eye-opener, and it's been that way the entire, well, what we've seen of the season. But he seems sounds like he's kind of baffled by it, and he's been hasn't been talking much to the media and kind of grumbling. And, you know, right now you're thinking the Giants – you know, as hard as that decision that was, you could see it coming a little bit because his velocity had been ticking very gradually down in the last two or three seasons. But you know, now he's out in the desert, and the best thing is that you know, wherever the horses are, that's where he's happy. The rest of it isn't going so well.
No, it's not. He's going to have to go incognito again if he does straighten it out in Arizona, but a 7 earned run average, a lot of home runs and things like that. And again, like Samardzija, when you see a pitcher of that quality getting whacked around pretty good, you wonder if it's not a health issue, especially with the drop in velocity. No one said anything. You know, it's more maybe conditioning or mechanical, but you have to wonder if there isn't some health issue in there. So today I'm going to watch that one. That's one that I'm going to watch carefully. How do you like the matchup today, Kevin Gausman and Walker Buehler?
Well, Buehler's is a tremendous pitcher. He's really, to me, if I had to start one guy, it would be him, even over Kershaw in a big game. You know, he's young, he's on the rise, he's full of confidence, otherworldly stuff. And you know they want to get this thing kind of squared away after last night. And you know Gausman though has been he's been very good. He's trying to you know prove his worth. And you know he who knows where he is next year, but he's you know he's just trying to get back to where he had been in the past, and he's been real good. So that's an interesting matchup.
Yeah, you know Bruce, in watching the Dodgers now, we've seen seven games. The Giants play the Dodgers, and you pointed out in your columns they play them tough down in L.A. They've done it for years down there. The Dodgers wipe up everybody in the division, and then the Giants are about 500, over 150 games or so. So here we go down at Dodger Stadium again. And for some reason, if you can figure out how to get the Dodgers on their front foot, because they all try, and with the open mic now, you hear Jock Peterson, or you hear Muncy, you hear, you know, when they pop it up, they pop off. and they think they should hit a, they think they should hit a home run every time up. And if you could get them off balance like Cueto did and have a changeup, you can deal with that lineup. And I realize it's a thorny lineup. You can't make mistakes, but they are dealable. I really feel that.
Yeah, well, for years, my favorite hitting coach was James Brown. He'll get on the good foot. But now you're going with the front foot, which, of course, makes a little more sense. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a really good lineup. But when I see the lineup card, I don't think to myself, whoa, this is historically good. I don't think that. I really don't. And, you know, obviously they won like 7 division titles in a row, and they make great finds like Chris Taylor and everything else. But they can be dealt with, and the Giants have proven that. And, you know, good pitching is usually where it starts.
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, Jock Peterson is still a 220, 230 hitter, and over the course of 162.
Talk about coming out of your shoes when you hit him. Yeah,
and he's got 30, over 162, but as a leadoff hitter, he's not getting on. And I don't care what they say about Betts. The Giants have handled Betts 2-for-16 in the opening series, and he did get a couple of hits Friday night, but they've handled him. Bellinger just swings crazy and is just not squaring it up. He's not. And Muncy is the same thing right now. And Turner is a damn good hitter. He's a very good hitter.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, you know, Dodgers might win 12-0 today, and they're in a sea of opposite field singles. I doubt it, but that's the beauty of baseball.
Yeah, it is. So last night, it gave us our gift last night. Of Giants Dodgers, even with nobody in the ballpark, we still had all the emotion of Giants Dodgers last night. So I liked it. I thought it lived up to the billing. Hey, looking at this day in baseball history, I know I sent you one of these, and it's about Roger Craig. And Roger Craig has his spot in baseball history. He really does. But Bruce, on this date in 1963. One loss shy of tying the major league record of 19 consecutive losses, Roger Craig switches his uniform number to 13 in an attempt to change his luck. The move appears to work when Jim Hickman lofts a short fly ball in the ninth inning with 2 out and the bases full in a tie game. The ball barely ticks the upper deck of the Polo Grounds, the overhang in left field, for a walk-off slam, giving the Mets an improbable 7-3 victory over the Cubs. And Craig was still in the game.
Well, this is a guy who lost 20 games 2 years in a row. And, you know, they had the 19-loss streak. I mean, it says a lot that they were still running him out there, although I don't know who else they were going to roll out there. I mean, Elio Chacon, maybe out of the infield.
Jay Hook.
Yeah, they were a remarkably bad team, one of the worst ever assembled. But they did keep running him out there. And it was New York. Roger Craig had made a real name for himself, you know, with the Brooklyn Dodgers. In 1955, he won one of the World Series games against the Yanks as a starter. He had a good history. He pitched Game 1 of the 59 World Series for the Dodgers when they were in L.A. now against the White Sox. In 64, after the Mets, he got a win in relief in the World Series. So he had the highest of the highs, the lowest of the lows as a pitcher. Then he becomes a pitching coach. Sparky Anderson brings him into Detroit, and he completely turns everything around, teaching Jack Morris and Milt Wilcox the split finger. He taught it to Mike Scott. He taught it to the Giants. He becomes one of the all-time greats of pitching coach lore.
Yeah.
And then he takes the Giants to the 89 World Series. I mean, the guy, what a career. And plus, he's not only one of the nicest guys anyone has ever met. You know, he was tough, too. I mean, he got guys to play, and he wasn't afraid to, you know, let them have it if they deserved it, and instilled confidence in guys. Just one of my favorite guys ever in baseball.
I think so, and I think what he did with the Tigers in 84, but coming in with Al Rosen, and Al Rosen knew the guy he wanted. And he, you know, you talk about changing the culture of baseball. He changed the culture of Giants baseball, Bruce, that lives on to today, I think. That was the turning point of the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, you think it sounds like fantasy that someone would come in with a philosophy that was more about emotion and belief and stuff like that. and make a big difference. But the way he got the Giants feeling about Candlestick was, first of all, that he even got them to think it was at all a worthwhile place. But not only that, a place where they could really make it work to their advantage. They could love coming to the park, watch the other team completely miserable as they trudge out of the clubhouse in the biting wind. And you know, on top of having guys like Will Clark and Robbie Thompson, it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing. You know, one of the things about Al Rosen, when he contacted Roger Craig, Al Rosen was still with Houston, and Roger Craig goes, I don't want any part of that. Your manager is Bob Willis. You know, they go back years with the Dodgers. He didn't want to take his job, but Al Rosen goes, well, no, I'm going to San Francisco. I want you out there. And it turned out to be one of the great eras of the Giants' history.
Yeah, I think so, and I think when it's all, and he's still alive. He's down in San Diego.
Yeah.
I think when it's all said and done for Roger Craig from North Carolina, he will have his spot in baseball lore. And we were lucky to have him here, and he just did a tremendous job. So I'm glad we could acknowledge that. He had lost 19 in a row, and Jim Hickman hit one off the upper deck. The Mets this weekend, kind of in baseball history, they were in the Yankees finally retired Casey Stengel's number 37. Boy, they were bitter with Casey. Now, two things, Bruce. One, where does Casey Stengel fit in the hierarchy of major league managers? The platooning, and he goes back to John McGraw and Rocher, Billy Martin, and all that. But the Yankees finally got around to retiring his number after the Mets already did. The Yankees were always bitter when Casey left.
Well, that's just absurd. I mean, you know, Casey, like you say, he goes back to playing for John McGraw. He's a pretty good player, too, a real good player, exciting player. And, you know, became a manager and scuffled around and in the minor leagues and little bit of stint in the majors. And he managed the Oakland Oaks in the late 40s for three seasons. In their final season, he's got Billy Martin at second base. He's got Cookie Lavaggetto and you know, some of the older guys. As well as a young Billy Martin out there, and they won the whole thing in 1948. So he gets the Yankee job, and what do? His first five seasons there, they win the whole thing. How do you not retire his number?
Yeah. Well, he got to 1960, and he turned 70, and of course the 60 World Series. And we're talking about Casey Stengel, one of the great managers. Again, this is what baseball is built on. It really is built on these kinds of things. And, you know, in 1960, he doesn't start Whitey Ford in Game 7. He starts him in Game 6, and Game 7 is a disaster, 10-9 Mazeroski and all that. And then they fire Casey. And Casey says, well, I'll never make the mistake of being 70 again.
can you imagine?
Great comment.
Yeah. Imagine outscoring a team in the World Series, like I think it was like 55-27. They literally scored twice as many runs, and they still lost. They'd win 15-3 and then lose a heartbreaker. And, you know, Ralph Houk comes in, and all he does is win the whole thing 2 years in a row. So, I mean, the most of his career was a little, you know, nothing particularly special, but they win in 61 and 62 and got to the 63 pennant, and they ran into Koufax and Drysdale. But he, you know, he got off to such a great start that he's always going to be beloved in New York. But Casey Stengel, when he was a player in the Pittsburgh organization, he was having a tough time and in the minor leagues, and the fans were all over him. And somehow he got a hold of a bird, of a sparrow,
all right.
And he put it inside his cap. He comes to the plate. Here come the boos. He doffs the cap, and the bird flies out. I mean,
I love it. And, you know, it's fun to talk about it because today it's different. The managers are different. The game is different. I understand that. It's changed, and we live with it. Crook and Kipe, they point it out all the time. But there was an essence of who the manager was, the colorfulness translated to the team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Roger Craig, Casey Stengel, it's sort of nice to on a Sunday to remember them. I like
Absolutely, Marty.
I like it. One other thing we'll do before we break here in about 2 minutes. Orlando Cepeda. Bruce, people forget that he was the first player signed to be a DH exclusively for the Boston Red Sox. And people forget that about Orlando, but on this date in baseball history, four doubles in a game for Orlando. And I know hopefully he's listening, and I know he's had some struggles lately, but I wanted to acknowledge Orlando today.
Yeah, and, you know, at that point, he's only got one more year after that in the bigs. You know, his knees were absolutely killing him. But he hit like 20 homers for the Red Sox that year. Became a beloved figure, and it didn't take him long to win those people over. And, you know, yeah, he had the four double game. Just less than a week later, he went 5-for-5 against the Angels.
Wow.
And, yeah, all he had to do was get him to the box. Get him in the box. I remember going to an old-timers game, and now, I don't know, he's in his 50s or something, and he gets up there. It took him just forever to get from the dugout to the plate, but he settles in and hammers one up the alley in right center. You know, in his prime, it's a double. That day, he'll just get down to first with a nice, clean hit. Opposite field, perfect.
Beautiful. Yeah, great recollection. Great recollection for Orlando, and we wish him well. And
absolutely.
Boy, those early pictures of Orlando and McCovey and Mays and everything.
Magical.
Hey, beautiful. Hey, great to talk to you today. Enjoy Sunday. And look, here we are in August, and thank God we're talking about baseball. Just be safe and healthy, and let's hope we get through another week.
You said it all right there.
All right. Take care, Bruce. Nice to have you on. Thank you.
Thanks, Marty.
All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. Boy, what a pleasure on a Sunday to talk about some of those parts of baseball.